This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Liliana Castillo. She is with Conservation Voters New Mexico, and Ben Shelton, who is the new political and legislative director at Conservation Voters New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So every year, Conservation Voters New Mexico comes out with what's called a scorecard, in which legislators are basically evaluated as to how they are doing to protect New Mexico's air, land, and water. So this just came out. First of all, how long have you been doing this, and why do you do it?
Our first scorecard was printed in 2005, so we've been, this will be our 11th scorecard, and our mission at Conservation Voters is to connect the people of New Mexico to their political power, to protect their air, land, and water, for healthy families and communities. And the scorecard is one of the cornerstone ways that we do that, that we really inform people of how their legislators are voting on these issues. And knowing the score is a really powerful way of being able to hold their legislators accountable for how they're voting on these issues.
Another reason we do it that way is for transparency. You know, it's a formula that goes into generating these legislators' scores. We decide which bills will be scored, and after that, it's all in their hands. So folks out in the public looking at trying to, you know, understand why their legislator scored the way they did, it's all really kind of laid out very clearly on the website, and you can go and, you know, there's nothing subjective. There's not as much subjective to it. You know, we don't pick basically on how much we like somebody personally or something like that.
It's all like basically there's bills. Now, what are some examples of the kind of bills that you choose to score? I mean, things that have to do with predatory lending, that doesn't fall under your purview. What kind of things do?
I would say that Conservation Voters focuses on the intersection of energy, public health, and the environment. So that's really where we focus. And so some examples could be like preemption, which is the state government trying to preempt or take away local control of like oil and gas or mining practices in a local community, for example. And also things like the solar tax credit, making solar more accessible for families in New Mexico and all kinds of families in New Mexico across the state, those kind of issues.
And things that have to do with pollution and rules and regulations around that. And one of the things when I looked at this year's scorecard, which recently came out, one of the things that's so striking is there's a bunch of legislators who score very high, like 100% protection of air, land, and water. And then there's, and you know, 100 in the 90s, some in the 80s. And then there's a bunch that are like 0%, 7%, 10%, 13%. There's almost no middle, and it breaks down. Is it entirely 100% along party lines?
No, it's not 100% along party lines. We have some folks in the Republican Party, for instance, who scored, you know, above 50%. We got a few 75% scores just in the last session. You know, one of the reasons that we see that division is the House and the Senate seems to be taking very, very different approaches to conservation measures. So you see lots of things reaching the floor in the House that result in not great scores for some legislators. So that's part of it. And, you know, part of it is just the political polarization of conservation issues. It's one of the things that we're very concerned about, and we would love to see turn around. We're always on the lookout for folks in both parties who demonstrate a real commitment to conservation values.
It's interesting. So there's not as many, if I understood you correctly, anti-conservation bills that actually make it to the floor of the Senate. There are more that make it to the floor of the House.
That is the way it has been working, unfortunately, at least especially in the last session, when the leadership of the House changed party hands for the first time in 62 years. But the Senate tends to thoroughly vet their issues in committee, and they're stopped there more often than reaching the floor.
When we think about the bills that are going through the New Mexico State Legislature, my understanding is that there's a lot more work involved in passing a bill that is that would benefit the environment, that would benefit conservation. But then there's also this job of stopping bills that are bad bills. And so promoting good bills, stopping bad bills, what does that ratio look like?
Well, that ratio has been a little bit skewed recently. In the last session, you know, a lot of our time was tied up with stopping things that were anti-conservation. That said, there were still certainly some successes. There's some good bills that got to the governor's desk last session. Senator Stewart introduced a solar tax credit bill that made it all the way to the governor's desk. Unfortunately, she vetoed it, but it was really encouraging to see the legislature really come around, you know, sort of unite around that. Also, Senator McSorley introduced an industrial hemp bill that got all the way to the governor's desk, and I think was also vetoed.
Yep.
But that was a great bill, and that was one that we supported as well. So there are certainly some proactive things, and we like to make sure that we're always working to move the ball forward, in addition to making sure that the state doesn't fall into the hands of polluting interests.
What were some of the scarier bills that got defeated?
I would say some of the scarier bills, like I mentioned a moment ago, preemption, which takes away local control. I think the issue of preemption itself is scary, because, again, taking very different, I mean, everyone knows communities in New Mexico, almost every community is different, and every community wants and needs different things. And so trying to put that kind of control into the big state government's hands and not being able to let the communities do what they need to do to protect their community, their air, land, and water was really scary. One of the biggest things that was really scary about this in the last session was that it was the biggest push I think we've seen for preemption. There were 5 bills that were introduced.
And was this because Mora County passed an anti-fracking ordinance or whatever it was in the county? I mean, was this a response to that kind of thing?
I think it was part of that. I mean, there was a lot of also talk about the Santa Fe County ordinance that was passed several years ago, I think. And, yeah. You know, so I think it's just a general push. And we know that this is not something that's going to go away either, even though we as a conservation community were able to defeat those measures in the last session, because the governor is pushing for preemption again in her state energy plan. She thinks that that's the right way to go for the state to have control. And so we know that is not going to go away.
Right. And I mean, it's really hard to understand what's in her head when you think about being in such a big, sunny, windy state and vetoing solar? Like, what is that?
That's a great question. You know, and she pocket vetoed the bill, which is a technical difference than actively vetoing. Simply, she didn't take action on the bill and allowed it to die, essentially. And so we weren't, and the importance of that technical difference is that if she vetoes something actively, she has to explain why. And because she pocket vetoed, we don't have an answer as to why, because she didn't have to answer those questions. Our hope is that we can support that measure again in the upcoming session, because the solar tax credit that's on the books right now expires at the end of next year. So we have one more session to get it through. So that's the goal.
Very interesting.
I would also add, for the scary sort of bills that we saw along similar lines, there was a bill that we were able to stop that would have removed the state's what's called renewable portfolio standard. It's basically a requirement that the state purchase a certain amount or have a certain amount of their energy generation come from renewable sources. Right now it is set that they must have 20% of the energy from renewable sources by the year 2020, and the bill would have removed that. So that's something, and that's been one of the great tools nationwide to promote the growth of solar and wind in particular.
Yeah.
And reduce pollution, of course.
Well, and reduce pollution and try to at least slow down, if not mitigate, climate change. And this is the other thing. It's very hard at this point for me to understand how any legislator in any party cannot understand how great the threat, not only health-wise, but politically, economically, in terms of agriculture, in terms of water supply, climate change is. Are our legislators just not really snapping to that?
I don't think it seems like they are. I mean, I think that's a struggle. And I think part of our...
Some are, obviously.
But I think it's a struggle, you know, and especially in New Mexico, like you said, water. I mean, our lives run on our water, and not just our lives, our economy, everything. So we're always working to try and elevate that issue and make sure people are aware, because I think that's some of it. Unfortunately, people just aren't fully educated on the true impacts. You know, climate change has become this, like, word that active people react to instead of like really trying to understand and find out what the true impacts are on New Mexico's communities, our economy, and then what things we need to do to stop and at least slow those impacts.
Yeah. Now, one thing that you guys also talk about and look at is what's called environmental justice. And a lot of the time, the people who are most affected by negative environmental impact are the people with the least political power. What does that look like in New Mexico, and how are you guys addressing that?
Well, I'd say one great example of what that looks like in New Mexico is the issue of uranium legacy waste. Back when uranium mining was a booming part of New Mexico's industry, the basically environmental harms, the radioactive damage was highly, highly allocated in communities that today were then and are today generally ignored, particularly in the Roundhouse. So part of our vision, certainly moving forward, is to make sure that, you know, one of the great missions of environmentalism is to give a voice to natural resources and nature and things that don't have a voice. But looking forward, we really see an opportunity to give a voice to communities that are kind of right on the fence line for a lot of this sort of polluting industry, a lot of this pollution, and really bringing their voices into the Roundhouse and amplifying that, because especially in New Mexico, the you know, environmental damage turns into human damage very, very directly, more than really a lot of other states, I would say. Not just because of the uranium issue, but also, like Lily said, because of the water issue. And, you know, we see a lot of this with sort of methane and, you know, health issues related to, like, coal generation and things like that. I mean, this is a very urgent and sort of immediate thing in New Mexico in particular.
Yeah, and just the issues, I mean, issues of voting rights, issues of organizing in those communities, issues of whether those legislators are listening to their constituents.
Yeah, then that's a big part of the work that we do as a family of organizations. We have a Conservation Voters New Mexico Education Fund, which is organizing in actually McKinley and Cibola counties, as well as in the Latino community in Albuquerque, because these are some, like you said, some of the most impacted communities, and their voices go unheard by their elected officials. And so we're definitely, that, like Ben said, moving forward, that is definitely something that we want to work to elevate as much as we can.
Now, let's just give a shout out to some of the heroes in the New Mexico legislature.
Sure. Well, I'm pleased to announce, I guess, on radio for the first time that our 2015 Luminaria Award winner is going to be Senator Cisco McSorley.
Nice.
He has a tremendous lifetime score. He has just been a very staunch advocate for conservation issues and just really unwavering. The integrity is really inspiring to see.
Yeah, and Santa Fe Senator Nancy Rodriguez is also a 100%er. Santa Fe Representative Brian Egolf is also a 100%er and has been every year in office. He was our Luminaria Award winner last year. There are several. I mean, we actually had the more 100%ers this year than we've had in any year of the scorecard. We had 37.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
How do you understand that?
You know, that's a great question. Do you have an answer to that question?
For why we would have more 100%ers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Conservation values are becoming mainstream values.
Yeah.
It's something that we're seeing, you know, happen more and more every single year. It's not something you have to convince folks of, that, you know, clean water and renewable energy and these things are, you know, they're no longer niche benefits. They're things that everyone sort of sees the value in.
Yeah.
And I think that's starting to get reflected in the way that our legislators are voting.
So we're talking about Conservation Voters New Mexico scorecard, and Ben Shelton is the political and legislative director, and Liliana Castillo is the communications and outreach manager at this fine organization. What can citizens do, and what do citizens do to influence their legislature? I mean, the session will be upon us any minute now. January, is it going to be a 60 or 30 day this year?
It's a 30 day this year.
Okay.
So it'll be budget focused. And mm-hmm. So we'll be anxiously awaiting the governor's call that she'll announce during her State of the State speech on the first day on January 19th. And I think one of the most important things people can do is talk to their legislators, communicate with them, let them know if they're doing the right thing. And, you know, if they're reflecting their values at the Roundhouse. And they can do that now with our scorecard. You know, knowing that score, like I said, is a powerful way to really hold their legislators accountable. And they can go to our website, which is cvnm.org, and there's a link there where you can click and go through an online system where you can send your legislators a message about their score and if you think it's a good score or not a great score, and you can look through all their votes and talk to them about it, because that's the way it happens.
One thing that I think is so difficult in our political dialogue or lack of dialogue in this country right now is that the Republican Party has set itself up as largely anti-environment. I mean, there are some conservationists on the Republican side, but you have this situation where, you know, they're anti-renewable, pro big oil, gas, and nuclear, and really don't represent the health interests of their own constituents, which are basically ordinary people who like to drink clean water and things like that. Do you see any changes? Do you see any movement in sort of Republican Party conversations where they can embrace at least some of these health issues?
Certainly. I mean, there's a great tradition of conservationism in the Republican Party. I mean, you look at most of the really landmark environmental pieces of legislation that we have in this country, and they've got, you know, Richard Nixon's name on them. One movement I see, particularly in younger conservatives, is, you know, a lot of younger conservatives think of themselves as libertarians necessarily, not necessarily, you know, Republicans. But I think that that's coming out of a very similar ideological place. And I think a lot of environmental values, when you think about, you know, distributed rooftop solar and a lot of the values of self-dependence and things like this, a lot of environmental values line up with that really, really well. So I think there's certainly a future for conservationism and environmental awareness in the among conservatives. I couldn't put a timeline on it. I wish I could. I would love to say that, you know, we've got some real Republican environmental champions, and I'm an optimist. I'm confident every day I'll wake up and read about, you know, a new young Republican politician who's really going to put this as part of their a significant board in their policy platform.
But you think if that happens, it'll be driven by the younger generation?
Oh yeah, that's certainly where I see most of the movement on it. And it does come out of that real self-sufficient line of thinking that kind of informs a lot of conservatism, I think.
So what else would you like to let people know about before we go today?
I would love to echo something that you brought up that Lily talked about, which is access to legislators. New Mexico is not a huge state, and folks are used to reading about, you know, their legislators and the state senate, the state house, and the newspaper, but you can pick up the phone and be on the phone with your legislator, your representative, or your senator very, very quickly. You have a lot of access to the folks who are making laws, so stay involved. You know, it's not something that, you know, you're not going to get the runaround from seven secretaries, because we have a citizen legislature here, so
Yeah. Take
the phone up.
And, you know, you can make those phone calls armed with something like, well, with information. For example, can you tell us about this health study of the mineral belt in central New Mexico?
Absolutely. This is an issue that CVNM has been working on for several years. And we introduced or brought forth a bill with Senator Benny Shendo and Representative Georgine Lewis. The bill would establish a fund to conduct a baseline community health study of the Grants Mineral Belt, which is where most of the uranium mining happened in Siebel and McKinley counties on the western side of the state. And these communities, like Ben said, have been impacted by the negative health impacts from legacy waste, uranium mining, stuff that has never been cleaned up, and pollution to their water for decades. And there's never been a health baseline established for those communities.
Oh, my goodness.
And so as the state is now considering opening our doors to new uranium mining once again, we're insistent that if that is to happen, the first thing that needs to happen is that a baseline needs to be established for these communities, so that legislators and decision makers have the tools they need to really make informed decisions about opening our doors to that kind of activity again.
I mean, is it a baseline at this point? I mean, when there's already been so much damage, I thought baselines were like before the damage.
There should have been, yes, absolutely. And the fact is that didn't happen, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So at the very least, we need to do it now before we start again, you know.
I would say that it's important to have that data baseline to give us an idea of really what we're dealing with, because we know that we've got the stories. We see the stories of whole families that were completely wiped out, like decimated. Like there was a family there, and now there's just a couple people wondering what happened. I mean, it's really tragic. It's heartbreaking stuff.
Always cancer?
Almost always cancer. Almost always cancer. Almost always related to uranium ore.
Yeah. And the way those stories always go is like, well, you can't prove that the cancer came from this source.
Right. So and the fact is they can't prove that it didn't come from that source either. And so that's where the reality is that we don't have the data.
You need the epidemiological.
The communities don't have the information they need.
All right. Well, much more to talk about, and I'm sure we will talk about that during the legislative session. Ben Shelton is political and legislative director for Conservation Voters New Mexico, CVNM. And Liliana Castillo is communications and outreach manager. For more information, people can go to cvnm.org. And I want to thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.